Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You're listening once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. My father is at the Ramadan session right now in Chicago, so unfortunately. My father right now, unfortunately, is at the Ramadan session right now, so I don't know what he's doing regarding the show currently. He should have called in. He usually calls in when he's in Chicago into the show, but he hasn't yet. So until then, we'll have to wait. I see that we have someone on the queue right now in the studio. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Are you going to be doing the show today? Are you prepared to do the show today, or did my father call you in to do the show today?
No, really, I just was prepared to do the warm up as normal. You know, I was wondering why usually we talk maybe an hour or so before the show every Sunday, but I didn't hear from him, so I really didn't know what was going on. But I'm prepared to
do a
warm up, but certainly not care to lecture today. You haven't been in contact with him at all?
I'll try to, but you can do the warm up, and then I'll just take it from there.
Okay. Well, hey, that's a good adjustment. No problem. I'll probably go for maybe 30 to 45 minutes, and you can take it from there.
Okay.
So give me the cue when you want us to get started, and we will.
All right, well, the floor is yours, sir. 3 minutes into the show, you can start.
Thank you very much. Dearly beloved audience, we greet you with the greeting of peace be unto you. Assalamu alaikum. And for those of you who may be in the audience who have been fasting for the month of Ramadan, we certainly acknowledge your sacrifice, your efforts, and we pray that you complete the fast in a victorious manner. And with that being said, we wish you, as we near the closing, Ramadan Mubarak. Let us always be sensitive to the unfolding manifestation in our reality. By that, I mean Imam Muhammad said and said to the believers and told us and asked the question, really, how do we know the Creator? We know him by his work. By his work, we examine his works. And the Creator's process is constantly working because he's constantly creating. Even as we speak, the scientists would say that whole universes are being created right now as we speak. And while we can readily understand that possibility in terms of the grand cosmos, a lot of times we tend to lose sight of the fact we do not remember that the Creator is also working in the affairs of men on this planet. The word suggests that he has two hands, metaphorically. And in one hand, he has control of the cosmos. And in the other hand, he has control over the affairs of men. And as we come to this close of Ramadan, as I alluded to earlier and suggested earlier and brought out and stipulated, we see that it's coinciding. Is happening almost simultaneously with the 240th anniversary of this American Republic. Yes, in this heated year of political controversy from the East Coast to the West Coast, from Canada all the way down to Florida and Stuart, Florida, for instance, where you have that terrible toxic algae taking over the water, and the everyday citizens contending that the political codes have not done enough to prevent what appears to be a major, burning, disastrous, and gruesome catastrophe. Yet we see it approaching on this 4th of July, the 240th anniversary of the birth of this republic. Also, we know that Master Farad Muhammad, that perplexing and complex mystic who founded the Nation of Islam, chose July 4th, 1930 as the alleged birthday of the Nation of Islam. Now, there is some suggestion that that date may not actually be literal and accurate in the literal sense, that it has mythological implications. Nevertheless, the lore is, the legacy is, the generally accepted history is, that the Nation of Islam started July 4th, 1930, which would be, according to my calculations, some 86 years ago. And we have these two moment of origin points coming and coinciding with, the end of Ramadan, where we enter to the Eid Fitr, the victory for the excellent nature that the Creator created in Adam. 240 years. We see every day now in the world vicious, barbarous, barbarian-like, savage, inhuman slaughter during these last 10 days of Ramadan. Brutal murder in Bangladesh. Brutal murder in Turkey. Horrific slaughter-like wipeouts in Iraq. Every day, almost the last week, some atrocious elimination of human life. Most of the human life being Muslims. Most of the human life, dearly beloved audience, being Muslim. Selecting the time of day where many of these Muslims according to the reports, have been fasting, enjoying post-fasting celebratory moments. And in the midst, after breaking their fast and enjoying their families, in the post-sunset moments, they're literally blown to pieces. By people who claim to be carrying the banner of a so-called Islamic State. And an intelligent Muslim would never call them Islamic State. These people are killing believers. And this idea that they making these kills with some kind, this is the Western sloppy reporting, with some kind of impulse or motivation for martyrdom and some speedy ascension to paradise, flies in the face of Quranic reality. The book stipulates clearly, to my understanding, and I'll stay on the phone briefly for any comments or questions before our young presenter closes us out, for any challenge to this, but my understanding that if a believer kills a believer in a so-called believer, kill a believer intentionally, the reward is not paradise, but hellfire. The reward is hellfire. We know, dearly beloved audience, that the overwhelming majority of 1.7 billion Muslims around this globe, they're not guilty of that kind of behavior. We know that. Especially the rank and file Muslims around the world. But I believe, as sure as I'm speaking here, of the 100% accuracy of Imam Muhammad's assertion that the global Muslim community is cursed. I repeat, that the global Muslim community is cursed. And why did he say that it was cursed? He certainly did not have the everyday good faith believer just trying to live according to their light or the Quranic prescriptions. He was talking about the leadership in the Muslim world. And the Quran talks about what happens when the roof cave in, when the leadership at the top of the social pecking order becomes corrupt, impotent, ineffective, narrow, and Quranically deviant. The roof has caved in. Can we prove it? Give you an example. Those forces in Arabia who are supposed to be keepers of the holy precinct, supposed to be. What have they been doing the last 2-3 decades with all that oil money, all the revenue that the Creator has allowed to be flowing beneath their feet? Have they utilized those resources to promote the most excellent missionary understanding of this religion, of this deen? The answer to that question is a clear, resounding, unequivocal no. What have they done? Utilize these forces, these resources, I'm sorry, to try to buy up the Muslim leadership in other countries. Engaging in a form of cynical bribery. Look, we were born and paid for and financially undergirded your religious development in your country, but you have to let us be the fathers. You have to propagate. You have to spread. You have to teach our brand of Al-Islam. You have to come under the influence of Wahhabism. You have to come under some irrational influence of Salafism, huh? We have documentary evidence of this dubious strategy in the life of the late Imam Waqidi Muhammad, when it's been commonly understood, no secret, that while he was alive, they came to him and offered him monetary resources, financial access, gewgaws of money. If, in their language, they would allow, that he would allow them to be our fathers in religion. What suggestion. When the book says the prophet is not the father of any of you men, but he's the prophet of God, he's the seal of the prophet, huh? So what kind of arrogance, presumptuousness, insolence, contemptuousness that they had, that they would try to appropriate and usurp a status that the prophet himself did not have, someone's father in the religion. And thank God we had a leader that was not subject to those kinds of wicked blandishment, those kind of low-life tantalizing offers. This dean needed a night visit. This dean needed a situation where an individual responded to that bright, piercing star in the soul as it interacted with the wise book, the clear book, the generous book that the Creator began to reveal to Muhammad, peace be upon him, during Laylatul Qadr, the night of power, the night that's better than 1,000 months. This religion worldwide needed a soul that was impacted by a night visit, huh? So that God would bring that soul out of the depths of darkness in the light by his will. So that this deen could be brought back to its excellence and its clarity and its purity. Could be brought back white as snow. 240 years since the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And in that birthday, we see the number 4. As far as the birth date and in the year of the lady's birth, 1776, but in the year 7 and 6 is 13, 1 and 3 is 4. And this is a special year because it's been 460-year periods since 1776. Let's do the math. Four times zero, 4 times 6 is 24. The 4 represent, as we know, the fourfold nature of the sons and daughters of Adam. The sons and daughters of Adam. We know when our father Ibrahim asked the question of about how to resurrect, he was given the cosmic science revealed instruction to take 4 birds. To take 4 birds. And that could bring a about the resurrection. In the book that's the script for this world's life, the King James Version of the Bible, it talks about Ezekiel wheeled in a wheel. And the Imam said that that wheel within a wheel, that is the individual, the first wheel, fourfold nature of Adam. In the second wheel is that same fourfold nature, that it expresses itself on the social or the communal or the collective level. And in that same book, in the script that has formed the mind of Western world, just like the Hollywood script forms the internal dynamics and conceptual plots of the movie, the King James, but not these other versions. Many of these other versions of the Bible that's come out the last 40 years have simply been an attempt to obfuscate, to obscure, to sabotage of the decoding and the desealing of the Bible that the Lady Mary Muhammad achieved. So nobody has, as far as common folk, the Aramaic, the Greek, and all these other languages, the original Hebrew or whatever, that was involved in early scripture. So you only have to go by the English translation. So if you decode a translation and they change the words drastically, then there's a possibility that your decoding process can be challenged by saying, hey, it doesn't say that anymore in this version. It says this. But let us not be deceived. The King James Version of the Bible, formulated, crafted, and grafted in 1611, is the script that has governed to a large extent this world's life. In that script, it says that Adam was created. And it said they named them Adam. So many times we look at Adam, especially in the context of Western script, as the creation of one individual and his so-called wife, Eve. We forget about the fact that in that same book of Genesis, it later say that he named them Adam. Adam was a community. Abraham was a community. Ibrahim was a community. Muhammad was a community. As well as an individual personality, Nabi and Rasulullah. And this Rasul, this seal of the prophet said that Adam would be resurrected. I think paraphrasing along the lines of 60 arm spans. The number four dealing with the complete fourfold human nature. The 60-year periods that have ensued since 1776, given a connection to the 60-arm span, calling our attention to, in this 4th of July, the need for the resurrection of the common citizen that was talked about in the Declaration of of independence. This general man, this universal man that's endowed by Creator, that was created in the most excellent mode by Creator, is in dire need of resurrection. Not just in the Islamic world, but right here in the citizenry of America. What's being perceived and translated as a political crisis is really a crisis of the large-scale, massive decimation and destruction of the nature of Adam under the widespread cultural influences that the late John Paul II called the culture death, a term that the Imam also adopted, and he tied it into the script which suggested that the wages of sin is death. The wages of sin is a massive, colossal cultural death. Yes, I have my preference for the presidency of these United States, but the prince, the ruler, the governor, the political has never been one sent to bring the guidance, to serve as a stimulant, to bring the rain, of that upon contact with the dead earth, with the dead mind, with the dead soul, to the divine, to bring the revelation, to disseminate the revelation, to explicate the revelation, to analyze the revelation. That task, that duty, that role, that obligation, I might add, has always been assigned to the prophets or one who come under the influence, a sincere witness to the truth that comes under the influence of a prophet. As I said on many times on this broadcast in this forum, I believe that Secretary Clinton will be elected president of these United States. But even when President Barack Hussein Obama was elected, this presenter did not serve under any illusions that somehow the cultural decline, the decadent orientation of this culture death will be solved, and it's not going to be solved now. The only way that it's going to be solved is that the universal American citizen is resurrected in the original pattern of Adam. Of course, this is not newspeak. This is not pundit analysis. This is not consensus explanation. But I ask you, dear beloved audience, in an order rooted in materialism, how could we expect an explanation rooted in revelation to be the consensus norm? No! We expect to be in the majority, in the minority. We expect to start off on the margins. But we have the faith, we have the courage to advocate, to move, to penetrate the mainstream, to stake our claim, to advocate in the market of ideas, protected by the bedrock principles of this country that's rooted in the Declaration of Independence, the idea that there's a First Amendment here, and we have freedom of expression, which implies freedom of thought. And we don't have to be cowed into going along with consensus opinion. We don't have to be moved by polls. That's a mundane political consideration. An aspect of American electoral politics. It has nothing to do with the cosmic plan of the Creator, his plan for the human being. So 86, Surah 86, the 86th birthday of the nation of Islam, an individual born some 3 years later, October 3rd, 3 years plus later, this is what we're dealing with. This is the kind of awesome, miraculous situation we are dealing with here. This is the kind of global paradigmic, the global worldview change that we are facing. An individual, the son of the student of this mystic, the student being the late Honorable Elijah Muhammad, his son born 3 years plus later, October 30th, 1933, in his life cycle, he experienced his soul experience, a night visit, wherein the room of triple darkness, the Creator came and brought him the light of revelation. He experienced in his life cycle a potent, powerful, unblemished, untainted night of power, put back in place, touch with the original purity of the message that was given to Prophet Muhammad. And as these two anniversaries intersect, the 240th anniversary of the birth of this great nation and the founding of the Nation of Islam, it's clear now that these histories must intersect. They must interact. And if America is going to continue to evolve and progress and perfect this proverbial union, it's going to have to unlock the influence taken out of prison of the prodigious work product Imam Muhammad in this country from 1975 to 2008. The same way in Quranic scripture context, Pharaoh had to take Joseph or Yusuf out of the prison in order to solve the perplexing as well as complex problem of that social order, that political and governmental, financial, economic order of that time. We live in, whether we accept it or not, in that same kind of historical malaise where the productive Adamic human being is a rarity in America now. And we must not only be dutiful in the concretized civic and governmental political sense, but more importantly, we must be dutiful and supporting those unseen values that have made possible the concrete institutions that we try to maintain and support in America. Dearly beloved audience, it's been a warm-up. There's been an attempted instigation of thought, a catalyst for reflection and contemplation. And we thank you for your attention. I think now, as I indicated, it's been about 45 minutes. That's enough. And at this point, we'll go to our main presenter to take us on. Brother, are you ready?
Yes, sir, I'm ready.
Yes, sir. So the microphone is all yours. May Allah bless you to bring something of excellence and of value and worth. And we have confidence that you come through in a big way. As-salamu alaykum.
All right. Wa alaykum as-salam. Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You're listening to myself, Alfred Muhammad II, who I'll be leading the show for the rest of the program. My father is traveling right now. He just got back from Chicago, the Ramadan session in Chicago, and I don't know what he spoke about particularly, but he had his speech prepared, and he outlined it to me, but he when he comes back, he'll probably give an excerpt off of what he talked about and what he said, but today I'm just going to talk about what I went through recently at the Night of Power, which took place yesterday. First off, I didn't even know the Night of Power was going to happen yesterday. Me and my parents, me and my mother and I, my brother, were at the mosque, and we was just like, we didn't know. After we got finished making Tarawih prayer, we saw everybody start coming in service, so we like, wait, what? Like, you know, the Night of Power is tonight. So, but we still didn't really have an indication as to whether it's tonight. We thought they were just going to read the Quran together, so we had left. And after that, we had decided to we had got home, and so we were like, well, what's the Night of Power today? We were going over whether the Night of Power was going on. And so finally we called up one of my mother's friends, and she said, yes, it is today. It is today. So we were like, how could this like slip our mind? But anyway, that's just a small minor thing in the whole story. So we get to the mosque. And we start. It's not a lot of people there. It's a couple, maybe 20 to 15 people, and we start talking about. They start talking about just really a lot of mostly spiritual stuff, you know, about thinkers and stuff like that, and you know, just being really the certain things you have to do regarding Islam and Ramadan and all these the pillars and things that you have to do in order to practice and be a solid Muslim. But they took it a step further this year regarding Night of Power, and they included a lot more new information. He included a lot more new information, and it was pretty informative. But slowly the conversation started to change and shift towards something totally different on the Night of Power. And initially, I wasn't even going to go because we weren't going to even go because we didn't know whether the Night of Power was going to happen. So we slowly saw that the conversation started to shift to more of a I wouldn't say activist kind of or you know an activist kind of a Night of Power discussion, but it kind of shifted from religion and spirituality to more of a form as to what to do regarding not just the Muslim community, but the African American community, and the conversation completely shifted from spirituality. And before we knew it, we went from talking about thikrs and how to mix a lot and all these other ritualistic practices that we do in Islam, and we went from that to talking about what's going on in the African American community. And so I of course know, if anybody knows me and they know my father, and they know that my father has had a pretty solid effect on me regarding how I feel about, you know, the current state of the African American community. He hasn't affected me fully because he's not young enough to see what I see regarding the youth. But solely the topic in the Athenatic Power starts to shift to youth and what's going on with our youth, and why are our youth in such a state of violence right now. And it was myself and another young man there, and he started talking about how he's older than me. He was like 20, I don't know, probably he grew up with my sister, so I was like 25, 26 or something like that. And he started talking about how he remembers all the kids that he used to go to school with and he used to come to the mosque with, and now not only are they not in the mosque that he is at now currently, but they are Muslims and they are also taking part in, you know, just this savage like behavior. They're going around and shooting, they killing, they doing all these type of forms of debauchery that they would have never done had they stayed in the mosque and had they, you know, kept themselves grounded. And we talked about why is this happening, you know, what's going on, why is it. And basically, and I later on I raised my hand and I basically said it's a complete failure I didn't mean to make it so plain, but it was a lot of older people in the room, mostly like, well, most of these people I knew for majority of my life. But I had to let them know that for the most part it was a failure on the part of the older generation. And I didn't want to come across as so hard. Again, I didn't want to come across as disrespectful in any way. But when the Imam was around, when Imam David G. Muhammad was around, when we had certain leaders who were around that were preaching, you know, a certain message, a lot of the leadership within not only the Muslim community, but the African American community did not want to fall in line. Instead, they gave a lot of the believers and a lot of the African Americans within the community a different message. They relayed a different message to the people, and as a result, we have gotten this. Now, I'm not saying all of the kids that are involved in violence have shared direct connections, but at the same time, a lot of it's a failure. We still should shed light on the fact that it is a failure on our part as a people for not relaying the message to the people who didn't even have it in the first place. We got the message, but we just did not relay it perfectly. Now, what do I mean when I say message or relaying a message? What I mean is that in the early 2000s, the 90s, the 80s, and the 70s, the African American Muslim community, we got a brand new leader. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad had passed away. We got the Imam, and a lot of people, and everybody knows about the schism between, you know, Farrakhan and stuff like that. That goes without saying. But when the Imam came in, a lot of people made him out to be seen like a spiritual leader, someone who knew, who had a vast amount of knowledge on the Salat and all that. And all of that stuff is true. But at the same time, we must never forget that the Imam preached a message not only just of spirituality and interfaith, and he reached out to the rest of the world and opened up doors that we would have never been able to reach had we stayed with the Honorable, had we kept the same message that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had from the 70s going back. And he opened up doors, you know, regarding interfaith and spirituality and things of that nature. However, the Imam also talked about other things. What did he talk about? He talked about community life. He talked about businesses. He talked about strengthening and organizing our people, the African American community. All of these points he outlined throughout his tenure in the leadership. And a lot of the leaders much like, well, I'm not going to talk about the other people. I'm not going to show that. But a lot of the leaders did not tell this to the people. And so as a result, what you have is people going, why? Well, why didn't this happen? Why didn't it? You're going to have some rebels in the group. But for the most part, the reason why this is our youth, and it's particularly in the African American Muslim community, is the way that they are right now, is because a lot of the older generation did not give the proper message, and a lot of the leadership within the older generation did not give the message to the younger people. And so as a result, a lot of the people a lot of the young people my age have a blatant disregard for not only the people around them that they are fighting and not caring about, but they have a blatant disregard for themselves, and they have lost their very own humanity as a result. Now, I'm not saying that is a result of people completely not relaying Imam W.D. Muhammad's message. It is a result of a lot of other things too. The culture has worked on my generation a lot. You know, it's a culture of death. It's a culture of violence. You see all the time, and I don't mean to sound like an old person, but you see a culture of, you know, you see the rap music, hip hop, whatever you want to call it. On TV, you have certain things such as, you know, TV shows that I get on every day to my fellow peers in school and everything, such as, you know, Love and Hip Hop and all these other shows that African Americans love. But at the same token, that has become, I don't know quite how to phrase it. I guess what I'm saying is that instead of a message of upliftment and a message of doing for self and going out and doing what you have to do in order to be a great representative to your people, that message has instead been replaced with a message and a religion, almost a new religion, a culture of debauchery and almost of savagery. Now, I'm not saying everything on TV is savagery, but for the most part, a lot of the things that you see in a culture are not healthy for the human soul. And my parents and a lot of the other parents within the community, not my parents, I'm not even going to indict my parents, but a lot of the leadership within the community and the African-American community as a whole has just failed to bring to light what really needs to be done. Instead, a message of disenfranchisement, instead a message of you can never do for yourself, you must always almost have a handout in a sense, that message has destroyed our youth and has always made it seem like the odds have stacked against them. And you couple that with the culture, which doesn't care about them in the first place, it's just trying to make a buck, and you automatically get a sense of violence and self-hatred for one another within the African-American youth. I mean, as an African-American male who's young, you cannot go past someone who is your age without experiencing a certain amount of animosity toward one another. And I'm not really a angry kind of guy. I don't know if you guys can hear it in my voice. I'm not really usually angry with people for the most part. But when you're on the streets and you're walking past a lot of the kids my age, they don't have the same amount of love that past generations of African Americans have had for each other. Yeah, you know, it was people back in the day who were rebels and they were shooting each other and stuff like that and they were getting into fights. But there was still a culture of, you know, a sense of brotherhood within the African American community, particularly the African American male community. And I don't know, I'm guessing for the women as well. And that sense of brotherhood within the African American community, it's gone. It has evaporated before our very eyes. And I think it's just a failure of the leadership. Now, I'm going to stop indicting our leaders, but I just wanted to bring that to light. It's a fact that, and I'm not talking about political leaders. I'm not talking about political leaders for the most part. keeping it safe, you know. And if we are able to do that, and if we connect this sense of brotherhood, and we can really go places in that regard. So I'm going to, without further ado, I had to go all the way till 4 o'clock, but I'm going to bring this episode of Religion Means a Lot to a close. Imam Yusuf Salam did the opening, and that's just going to be that. My father will be on air at 7 o'clock, and that should be that. So 7 o'clock tomorrow on Religion Means a Lot. Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. Sorry for my rant if I ran it a little bit, but I feel like sometimes we have to address the problems quick and drop political correctness just a little bit, as Donald Trump says. I'm not, you know, a Donald Trump fan at all, but we have to drop political correctness a little bit, and we have to talk about what we did wrong, and we have to address what we can do right. It's just a very simple thing, and a lot of people don't want to hear it sometimes. But it's what we have to. So peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You're listening once again to another edition of Religion Means a Lot. We'll see you at 7 o'clock on Monday. Thank you.